The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on the rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, give it 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 254th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwas, and I am the host of this lovely show. Joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how are you doing?
Oh, dude, I am doing well. I really was feeling good after the pay-per-view, and we were supposed to record this on Sunday, and it was funny because 2 days in the wrestling world, a lot of days in the wrestling world,
absolutely
nothing happens. Like, literally, you'll go a whole week and we'll be like, dude, did anything happen this week? This 2 days, dude, fucking everything happened.
Everything.
So 2 days. Okay, so if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the last big New Japan show and you're trying to avoid spoilers,
this is your warning.
This is your warning to probably skip about 10 minutes ahead. Not saying we're going to talk about New Japan for 10 minutes, but that would be a safe number to skip ahead. All right. So, Austin has a super early flight. So just to let you know, this is going to be, I wouldn't call it an abbreviated episode, but
we're going to hit all the main points.
But let me just say, I might drone on and say a comment like 20 times, I'm not going to do that this time. So, so that might be a good for some of you out there listening, but we're going to go ahead and knock out this. So first thing, we're actually going to do the news first, and we're going to pretty much finish with the Wrestle Dream review. News, big shout out, Zack Sabre Jr., your new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion.
There it is.
Yeah, he beat Naito at the last show. I don't remember what that show was called, but he beat him on Monday, Japan time, Sunday, America. So, or early Monday morning in America. He is your new IWGP World Champion. He's going to defend the title at Sonata at the, the Joint Rev Pro show that's coming up soon. Yeah, I should actually know the names of things before I decide to talk about them. So, Royal Quest. Okay, so he won it at King of Pro Wrestling. That was the show, King of Pro Wrestling 24, and he's defending it against Sonata at Royal Quest. So, I do try to show my respect. We bring that because we are building in January to a New Japan / AEW show, which is called New Japan Wrestle Dynasty. So that's going to happen. So with this New Japan stuff is all directly tied to how it's going to deal with AEW. So ZSJ, So if they do a match, champion versus champion match, ZSJ would be the champion as of right now. Then
he absolutely deserves it, too. The dude wrestled his ass off for the last, year plus, like him winning all, and winning in the G1 and everything like that. Like, Zack Sabre Jr. has been long overdue for something like this.
And, through his career, he's put on a significant amount of size. Knows I'm kind of a body guy. I'm all about, looking the part. And he's put on a significant amount of size. He used to be like a string bean, and now he's whatever, a fatter vegetable. He's like a stalk of broccoli instead of a string ring now.
He's
never going to be considered fat or anything like that, but he has put on a significant amount, weight. And right. then these next two pieces of New Japan news actually tie together. Young Bucks will wrestle at New Japan Wrestle Dynasty. They announced it on the King of Pro Wrestling show. So they're going to wrestle someone. And more than likely, they're going to be wrestling Kenny Omega. And then another, this one's a huge announcement. Huge announcement for professional wrestling in general. Hiroshi Tanahashi announces that he is going to retire, I put the wrong date here, from New Japan at Wrestle Kingdom 20, which will take place January 4th, 2026. So he's going to do a farewell year and then retire. His last match will be at Wrestle Kingdom 20, January 4th, 2026. I looked at my wife as soon as she said that, and I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not a huge, I have never been a huge Hiroshi Tanahashi fan. I am a Hiroshi Tanahashi respecter. I respect the shit out that man and what he's done for wrestling and what he did for New Japan to help keep the doors open and rebuild this new generation for me to be able to watch. So I definitely respect it, but I love being at big moments in wrestling, and you know, this is not going to be like, oh, I'm done wrestling full time. He's actually retiring. So that, right as of right now, all intents and purposes, all plans, that will be my first trip to Japan.
It's I wish I could join you for that, too, because, I mean, like, first of all, like, obviously, no spoilers, but a little bit, like, the amount of, like, amazing wrestlers that are retiring or just not wrestling full time anymore that a lot of us grew up with is kind of insane. You're seeing that shift now from like this new generation of wrestlers and this new generation of stars. Like the old guard has passed the torch in a lot of instances. So like shouts out to Tanahashi. I mean, like we can't wait to see how this final full year of his career goes. And as someone who's been able to see Tanahashi wrestle in person a couple times, it's been nothing but a pleasure to be able to see Tanahashi wrestle in person, because dude is great, like absolutely great.
Japanese John Cena and John Cena are actually retiring roughly the same year.
Pretty damn close. Pretty damn close.
Yeah, so that's crazy to think about.
And then just for the Young Bucks to be back wrestling in Japan, I mean, obviously it's Wrestle Dynasty. You would kind of think that they were going to be on that show. But I mean, they haven't been in Japan in forever, so it's just kind of weird to think that way.
And the speculation is the Young Bucks are going to wrestle Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kenny Omega in that show.
So interesting.
Yeah, at that show, because Kenny Omega did some speech about not wanting to wrestle Tanahashi, wanting to wrestle with Tanahashi. So that was like a big deal, and it looks like he's going to end up, him and Tanahashi are going to go after the Bucks. So that would be a unique match. That would be something that you have never gotten before. I believe it would be the official beginning of Tanahashi's last year as a wrestler. So that would be pretty cool.
As long as he beats the Bucks is all I care about.
Yes. As long as he beats the Bucks. And the other piece of news, the thing that got the world talking, which I will never understand why it gets the world talking.
Because it's the internet. What do you mean you don't understand how shit gets people talking?
Dude, you go to PWI site, they generally tell you exactly what the criteria for ranking how it is. It is basically a kayfabe list based on how you were booked with your company. And if you pay it, if you actually read their list, you would come to the very simple conclusion, it's very easy to pick who it was. So me and my friend Zach Weiss were in Pittsburgh, and we were kind of talking about the PWI list. And he says, it's probably going to be Jordan Grace. And I say, it'll probably be Tony Storm, and then Jordan Grace will be two. And we came up with the top two within like a 5-minute conversation, because we know how the damn thing works. It's not hard. Tony Storm was the world champion the whole year. She was on TV and featured every episode of the show.
Right.
It's not hard. She was the only person like that. Rhea had significant time off. Mercedes wasn't even on the list because she didn't have the minimum of 10 matches. Like, just think about it. Becky went away. Think about all the favorite wrestlers that went away during that time. It was pretty simple. It was going to be Tony Storm. Because no one on the WWE was pushed at the same level as Toni Storm was in AEW.
She's literally the biggest female star in the company.
Correct.
Until, obviously, until Mercedes Moné. But even then, Mercedes hasn't been booked as hard as Toni Storm has.
Yes, she was on the show every week, whether it was a segment or talking or whatever. So it was like, oh, she's probably going to be one. So, Toni Storm was one. Jordynne Grace was two. You can go through the rest of the list anytime you want to on PWI's site. I just bought the magazine because I want to get Toni Storm to sign it. But I'm going to talk about how this affects AEW. The AEW, Willow Nightingale was eight, which I thought was kind of low because I really thought she was really heavily featured this year, but whatever.
I mean, top 10 is deserved, I would say. Yeah,
top 10 was deserved. Mariah May at 9. Athena, shout out to Athena at 10.
Yes.
Because she's not on TV.
She's not, but for her to still be top 10, I think that's just indicative of how damn good she is.
Yeah, and she's the most pushed act in ROH, like, period. She is the face of ROH.
Yeah.
Even more than, like, let's say the world champion Mark Briscoe, because from what I can tell, he's not on ROH a whole hell of a lot. So, Athena's the face of ROH. Her storyline with her minions and Billy Starks probably is going to be the main event of Final Battle this year. It is what the show is built around. So, shout out to Athena at 10. Julia Hart at 26. She probably would have been higher if she got injured. So, she's been gone for a long time. So, it's 26 with as much time as she's missed. Impressive. Hikaru Shida at 31. Billy Starks at 33. She's up from last year. Chris Statlander at 36. Deonna Purrazzo at 39. I think at one time, like when she was in TNA, she might have been top 10. Red Velvet, 51. Sky Blue, 54. Queen Aminata, 55. Thunder Rosa, 65. I truly believe this is the highest Red Velvet, Sky Blue, Queen Aminata have all been. And since Sky Blue and Queen Aminata are best friends, them being 54 and 55 is pretty cool.
It works out.
Yeah, it works out. Thunder Rosa is 65. If you see, like, you think maybe it's low for Deonna, Thunder Rosa, yeah, they missed time. You know, Deonna was pushed when she first started with AEW, then it kind of went away kind of thing. So it's been very inconsistent with her. I think next year she'll be a much higher number. I think Queen Aminata is going to be a much higher number next year. If what I think is about to happen to Billy Stark, she's going to be higher. Can't get much higher than Toni Storm at one. Willow, she could be higher. Mariah May's definitely going to be higher. I think she'll be top five next year because basically how she's been pushed. So, but it's PWI, great list. And just like Cody Rhodes always says, everybody wants to be one. The reason you want to be one, it's not because PWI is this, I mean, it's respected, don't get me wrong, but like PWI is this great thing, direct telling people who's the best artist. It basically means if you're number one, that means you're the most pushed star in the world. Who doesn't want to be the most pushed star in the world?
Obviously. The list makes sense for exactly what it is, you know? Yeah. And I don't understand why people care so much about that when it's basically built in kayfabe, so... But congrats to Toni Storm regardless.
If you want
and everyone from AEW who was represented in the first place.
Absolutely. And if you want to, you want a list that that dictates your taste and what you want,
make your own.
Yeah, make the random guy on Twitter 150 and you can
boom.
You can rank that list on whatever you want. But don't argue with PWI on their list, their criteria. Why would you argue with them on their list? It's their
absolutely
list.
Absolutely pointless.
It's their list. It's their criteria. They can do what they want. I do the same thing every year when Meltzer's list comes out. It's literally a fan club voting, and I never understand why people get, are you in the fan club? Well, no. So does it matter? Like, why would you care at that point?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, if you go to a Chiefs fan club, Patrick Mahomes is probably going to win MVP every year.
Just how it goes. Just how it goes.
Yeah.
But regardless of the fact, though, that's all the news that we have now. Yeah. So we can go ahead and we can get into our review of Wrestle Dream 2024. Before we get into everything regarding that, though, guys, Download this fine show on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Turn automatic downloads on. Share us around with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. Rate, review, subscribe. Follow us on Twitter. We're at AT Elite Pod on Twitter. You can follow at Social Suplex, who make this show possible. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. So there's only a couple things I wanted to mention personally from my point of view off of the 0 hour matches, which were Atlantis Jr. versus Brian Cage for the Ring of Honor Television Championship, Harley Cameron versus Anna Jay, and M&M Collection versus The Acclaimed. There's only a couple things that I want to and then the 8-man tag match with the Outrunners conglomeration versus the Premier Athletes in the Dark Order. There's only a couple things I wanted to mention from that. One is that Brian Cage is the new Ring of Honor World Television Champion, and big congrats to him on that. And fucking Mason Mansoor, they brought out Rico. Like, mid-2000s worked with Billy Gunn Rico. Back when Billy Gunn was part of a gay tag team. That Rico. I could not fucking believe it when I saw him. Rico. I was just like, there's no way that's who I think it is. I was just like completely floored. And the way that they brought it together too with Daddy Ass. And he went to Anthony Bones afterwards going like, no offense, killed me.
Rico Constantino is one of the last American Gladiator winners. Did you know that?
I did not know that, actually.
He actually won the American Gladiator like for a season. So that's where I knew him from. And then, you know, he became a wrestler. And yeah, because that's like actual, it's a shortened version of his real name. And when I was discussing who the surprise was going to be, I thought it was going to be Chuck Palumbo. And apparently, I had heard rumors that they actually tried to get Chuck Palumbo at one upon a time. They were trying to get Chuck Palumbo, and it just
didn't work out.
But I thought that was fucking cool. So I'm glad it was Rico. That was a fun match. You know what I mean? And you know. The right team won with the Acclaim. The Outrunners are over as fuck.
Oh my god. That's another thing I was going to mention too, is how fucking over the Outrunners are. Like, yeah. For the love of God, like,
dude,
book them to the moon.
I'm not going to ever say they should be world champions. I'm not going to say they shouldn't be. But I'm never going to say they should be world champions. What I'm going to say is, even if you never plan on getting the title, use this heat to get them to a matchup with the Young Bucks, and of course them lose. You know, they would lose at that point, but
right,
dude, everybody would want them to win. You want to talk about heat, which seems to be the theme of the AEW right now, is getting heat. That would definitely get heat.
Oh my god, yeah.
And shout out to the Swolverine, Brian Cage. Like, I like that ROH is getting their titles on people that they feature on ROH a lot. So Brian Cage, mm-hmm. a person that is pretty much on ROH television. If you watch ROH television, like every week, I do read the results. I don't watch it every week. I just not enough hours in a week or whatever. But yeah, he's featured on it. So shout out to him. And yeah, I really enjoyed every match. I thought Anna Jay and Harley were fine. I mean, could have been better, could have been worse, but I think that they were at least fine. So yeah, I'd like to see more there, and I like that I like that there's that many matches on the pre-show.
Yeah, and then also, we're never gonna let Tony Khan try to start a chant ever again because he's bad at it, because it did not go well when he tried to have the grandsons of Antonio Inoki out with Ichi ni Sanda.
Yeah, dude.
That chant was a disaster. Never let Tony Khan lead a chant ever again. But
not only you, but no one actually knew what the chant was.
Exactly. It was terrible. And he was like, "We got to do it again." I'm like, "No, dude, the moment's over. You can't do it. They don't. Yeah. No one knows what you're doing."
Dude, it's one of those things. Hindsight being 2020, you start setting that chant up like weeks in advance. And then, you know, you have then you have the audience ready. Or you say, hey, we're about to do a chant for Antonio Inoki. Have it up on the screen. It goes Ichi, Ni, San. then say Ichinisa and do it like 3 or 4 times. Okay, now everybody got it, and then do it.
Right.
Because no one's going to get it on the first time. I'm not, like exactly. I said, this is all absolutely hindsight being 2020. I would not have done any better. I want to make it 100%.
Sure.
Now, you probably would have. You're used to talking in front of large amounts of people. That is what you do for a living. So mm-hmm. I completely understand how you would do it better. But mine would have been just as awkward as Tony.
I would have gone to Tony and I'm just like, listen, Tony, I understand your deep love of professional wrestling and the respect you want to show the grandsons of Antonio Inoki. Do you expect these random people in Seattle to know what the fuck you're talking about with those four words?
Dude, and that's the crazy thing is he loves wrestling so much and he makes a wrestling product for most of the time. He makes a wrestling product for people that love wrestling as much as him. But yeah, most of your average run-of-the-mill people at your show that are there to see Orange Cassidy do not love wrestling as much as Tony Khan.
Yeah. And then the only other thing that happened on the pre-show was Okada was approached by Kyle O'Reilly, who wanted a match with the fighting champion. And he was like, nah, bitch. In which he's like, okay, we'll try a different approach. And he knocked him down. They started brawling. CD ejected both of them from the arena. So that led to one of the matches that we'll talk about that's going to be on tonight's Dynamite when you guys are hearing this. And then, you know, maybe we get to see those guys square up in a singles match. I would love to see that. But we'll move right over now to the main show, which opened up with Hangman Adam Page versus the Bang Bang Gang Switchblade Jay White. First of all, Jay White looking fucking swole as shit. Dude looked ripped as a motherfucker. And this was an interesting match for me because I didn't know exactly what to expect from this just because, like, the interest of the match was the fact that Hangman's back in Washington. He's in Tacoma. And Washington is literally Swerve's house. So they were chanting Swerve's house at this man repeatedly. And also, fuck you, Hangman. Like, the crowd was absolutely giving it to Hangman, which I loved. Early parts of the match, Hangman was controlling pretty much the entirety of the opening parts of the match. Like, I was surprised at how long it took for Jay to really start getting things going. But when he did start getting things going, oh my God, did Jay just wrestle his fucking ass off. I loved how they were able to work in the leg, and I loved him moving from different parts of the ring to avoid the buckshot lariat and then catching the leg with the dragon screw. Avoiding the low blow I thought was also pretty damn good. And they were building up big time in the commentary about counter wrestling for Jay White, and the fact that they built that up with that and he was using a lot of counters to be able to win do this match, I thought was really cool. And the way that he is able to catch him in the buckshot and then turn it into the Blade Runner. Crowd popped crazy for it too. When Jay started going, man, this crowd came alive. And Jay White pins Hangman Page. And what I would consider an upset, even though obviously it's Jay's only just been back and he's been gone for a little while, considering how much Hangman's been all over the place with this recent run that he's been on, and that he just came off of the massive victory that he had over Swerve in the Lights Out match, this is an upset, I would say. And I thought it was a really fun, wild way to start off the show. Like I said, shouts out to both of these guys. Really strong opener. Really, really strong opener.
Yes, I like unexpected wins. I like unexpected losses. In this particular case, it was Jay White. This was probably one of my favorite matches of the year. Now, was it the best match of the year star ratings? I don't think so. I don't know. Some I would probably put it like at 4, 4.5, somewhere in between there, as far as star ratings on a match. But it was one of my favorite. Why? Because I should have expected it to bang, which I kind of did, but I did not expect to go to this level. It was just a wrestling match, and they were going at each other like they hated each other. And in the end, Hangman went for his move. Jay White had a counter, which if you're a true Jay White fan or a true Jay White observer, that's a huge part of his game, is the counter game. He figures out these very creative ways to counter into the Blade Runner. He gets it in, and you don't kick out of it. It's like one of the few moves in wrestling that no one kicks out of. It's actually a protected finisher. So he just hits it, and then he pins Hangman. I was very excited. great way to start the show. Very amped. This is what, you know, AEW pay-per-views, this is what you generally get. But starting off a wrestling pay-per-view with just a banger wrestling match, let's fucking go.
Yeah. Also, there was the powerbomb on the steps, which set up for a lot of usage of the steps, it felt like, on this show, personally. There were some damn hard bumps. And I also just liked how Hangman sold the knee injury. Like, that was, like, when he hit the dead eye and it fucked up his knee and, like, the on the apron, too. I was just like, I don't know. I like the psychology a lot in this.
Yeah, I don't really feel like this is the end of Jay White and Hangman. I don't think Hangman's going to let this pass. I think he has a new obsession now.
And maybe an obsession that he holds on to for quite some time.
Yes.
We then move over to the Women's World Championship match between Mariah May and Willow Nightingale. Nigel McGuinness is the voice of the voiceless, or the voice of the simps, I guess. And also, he was cracking me up with his rhyming shit. And it was like the runt that you something, and he's like, or something along the lines of that. And I'm like, oh, I know what you meant to fucking say, dude, when you said that.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I was like,
killed me. Absolutely killed me. And I'll say right now, this was Mariah May's best title defense. Willow Nightingale and Mariah May wrestled their asses off. And obviously, I was critical because I was like, Willow just lost the TBS championship match against she just lost a match, a street fight against Chris Statlander. Why is she getting a title shot all of a sudden? I really don't care because I knew they were still going to wrestle their asses off, and they did. Willow just working towards the pounce. I love the way that they just showed off also the strength, I would say, of Mariah, because she had like deceptively really, really good strength. And I just really, really liked the way that they wrestled in this match. The closing moments too, where Mariah turned everything around, I thought was just spectacular. Like, I just thought the way that she was able to string everything together after she just got like completely slammed into the corner on Fireman's Carry Slam. Like, I don't know. I just really liked it. It was my favorite match of Mariah since she's been world champion. Obviously, I'm just like itching and waiting for when we eventually get Toni Storm back or whatever her next challenge is as Women's World Champion. But I think this will only consider to like, Mariah looked great as world champion, but again, it's another just bright shining light on how damn good Willow Nightingale is, and like how this woman will be one of the faces of the women's division in AEW for such a long time, and there will be gold around her waist for sure in the coming months.
Yeah, I just, as far as this match, I'll take it one level. I think this was her best match in AEW, period.
I think that's also another really good point, too.
Yeah, I just thought this was... I thought Willow was everything she needed to be. I think it legitimized this title run because I do think the run had gotten off to a slow start. I think she needed a match
like
this.
And I think, too, like I said, it's like I won't go fully to agreeing with you just because of how I think the blow-off match for Mariah against Toni, I just think, is her best match just because the story is another thing that carried it to another level. But in terms of her best like wrestled match, yeah, this is her best wrestled match, I would say, like technically wise.
Absolutely. And that's what I meant. I mean, the story,
sure.
The story at All In was amazing. You know, it exactly, was like, yeah. And it was the perfect end of their story. But yeah, as far as actual, just, you know, move for move match, I thought this match was great. And I think they did a great job of teasing Willow winning. I think they had me on the edge, and I was like, "Oh, they're gonna go with Willow." And then she hits
I thought when she was setting up for the Avalanche powerbomb, but Mariah was able to hurricanrana her and then hit that knee. That's when everything started clicking, and I was just like, "Holy shit, man! What a way to close this match!"
And then she hit those series of moves, and I thought it protected Willow too because she had to throw. She didn't just throw one finisher.
She threw the entire thing at her. Yeah.
Yeah, she threw the kitchen sink, and that's what it took to keep Willow down. Mariah May and Steel Champion. I thought this match was excellent. And you know what's even better? And I have to, I criticize. So when you criticize and then someone does something right, you have to come back and say it. Perfect placement for this match on the card.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Perfect placement for this. This was the perfect place. Like, when you watch the rest of the show and everything, it's like if it was later, it would have been after this and this. And, you know, perfect placement for the match on the show.
Honestly, like, there wasn't too many things that I was, like, in terms of placement-wise, where I was like, eh. Like, honestly, like, maybe a couple things I could nitpick. But, like, I wasn't too upset about that for the most part.
You need the women in a position where they are built to succeed. You know what I mean?
I agree. And I think right after you get a title match right after the opening match, and it's the women, and I think, like, they carried the momentum of that first match and kept it going.
Absolutely.
And then we fell off a cliff. TNT Championship match between the Scapegoat Jack Perry versus the wrestler Katsuyori Shibata. I'm going to tell you right now, I feel no need to comment on this match whatsoever, because the only thing people are talking about is what happened after this match, which only continues to service my point that no one gives a fuck about this TNT Championship run by this shithead. No disrespect to Shibata, he wrestled his ass off.
I thought the match was good, but I never got in it. Never got into it because I didn't think he was going to win.
Exactly. There's no care factor whatsoever. It was a good match. Both guys can wrestle. I'm never going to take that away from Jack Perry. He can wrestle. But no one gave a fuck.
And with what happened after the match, I think it led to my idea that this was supposed to be Daniel Garcia's spot, but he didn't sign his contract.
1,000%. So basically, Jack Perry wins the match. Who gives a fuck how? And it looks like he was going to proceed to hit Shibata with the TNT Championship. That's when Daniel Garcia comes out and they stare each other down, and he leaves the ring, and he basically just walks away from Daniel Garcia. Then MJF's music hits, and he's back for the first time since he got pile driven in All Out, and he comes out, and Garcia's like, come on, get in here. And then basically right before they're about to get into it, Jack Perry takes the TNT Championship and hits Garcia and then fucks off. And that's when MJF starts beating him down, says, like, it's been a while since I saw you, buddy. If I recall last time I saw you, I defeated you without breaking a sweat. And then I went and made several movies and several millions. Shout out Happy Gilmore, too. And he's like, but you've been up to big stuff, too. You had a bidding war, too. But you know what? I want to thank you because you told me my dynamite diamond ring was in a pawn shop in Buffalo. Took some time, but I found it, and you're going to kiss this thing. So he's about to line up to hit him with the dynamite diamond ring. And you know, it's all about the boom. Adam fucking Cole is back. He sprints to the ring and MJF runs away. And Adam Cole is back. So two things. One, Jack Perry versus Daniel Garcia actually gives me a reason to care about this TNT Championship, because I think this is the first true match that Jack is going to have regarding that TNT Championship. So I will absolutely be excited to see what they do with it, because Jack has done nothing, but there's a chance for some good to come out of this feud, specifically if Daniel Garcia beats the fuck out of him and takes the belt away from that prick. But I do think this feud could lead to some really good moments, and I think this could actually make the TNT Championship run of Jack Perry mean something. And that's all I want, is for him to make that belt mean something, because he has done nothing but make it meaningless. Second of all, if you remembered anything about Adam Cole wearing a devil mask, you made that up in your head. Let me get right here the neuralizer from Men in Black. Look right here, there was never a devil mask. You imagined that yourself. Like, and honestly, it's for the better that we just don't even acknowledge that. It never happened. Forget about it. Now we have MJF Adam Cole in a way that still makes sense and is going to be amazing. And I'm so happy Adam Cole is back, man. There is no devil mask. I don't know what the fuck the devil mask that you're thinking of is.
I call this the Triple H rule. Anytime you're out for a year with an injury, you come back a face.
Always.
Because I remember Triple H right before WrestleMania 18.
Oh, sure.
Literally was part of the biggest heel faction in the company. And then he tore his hamstring. And then it was like, oh, And he just came back, and he was in the main event, and he was the biggest face in the world.
Dude, I remember when Sydney was at, I think it was Double or Nothing, I think. Was it when Adam Cole was out there and MJF returned, I think?
Yeah.
So I remember she sent me the video. She was there for that when that happened, when Adam Cole just came out for no reason other than for MJF to return. It's crazy how much changes in a couple months.
Yeah, so we got Adam Cole back. It looks like he's going to be a face, which is good. We got in this moment, we set up Daniel Garcia versus Jack Perry, and we also kept the Daniel Garcia and MJF have beef, and then we started that now we got Adam Cole and MJF. So in this case, we got like three different sets of feuds. Shit, if you wanted to, they could all four be going after the TNT title. Or, you know what? There's this thing called the Continental Classic. You heard of it? It was pretty good last year.
It was pretty good.
Drove the ratings last year. It's coming up. What if all four of them are in the Continental Classic for some reason? Who knows?
Yeah, but who knows? Yeah,
who knows? I thought this was a great way to set up and build excitement for the, you know, what's going to be the end of the year. So they did a good job building up excitement right there.
I would 1,000% agree with that. We then had match of the night, probably was going to be considered match of the year for a lot of people. And I can't even, guys, international championship, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, Konosuke, Takeshita. I don't even know where to fucking begin with these guys. Like, I truly, I don't know what to say.
Dude.
Like, it was just, if you haven't seen this match by some other coincidence that you haven't seen this match, fix that immediately. I cannot believe how insane everybody in this match was. And of course, it was very predictable what the finish was going to be, as Don Callis screwed over Ospreay with the screwdriver, with Kyle Fletcher getting in on there. And then Alpha, Konosuke Takeshita is finally champion. He is the new international champion. I'm so happy for Takeshita. The man deserves it so goddamn much. Fletcher also had a tiger driver right afterwards, which I thought was a nice touch. But dude, this fucking match was insane. I could not believe some of the shit that these guys were doing, and just the incredible work from all three men involved. Will Ospreay, Takeshita, Ricochet. It was just... Man. Like, this is one of the matches I would show a fan who hasn't seen AEW. I would show this match just because I'm like, dude, like, the level of work that you see from this guy's, like, you can't look away from it.
You literally, and I've been saying this, and I'm still going to beat this drum, you could do your match of the year, your top five match of the year, and just do Will Ospreay matches if you want.
It's seriously, like, he's in a category of his own.
Yeah, it's just like, you could. I mean, there are other matches that were great, other matches that I loved. But if you wanted to, if someone says, I'm handing in a list and it's just going to all be Ospreay matches, I could not, in good conscience, argue with that person. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Because that's how good he was this year.
Yeah,
so that's how good he was this year. It was just like, that's how good he's been for a few years, honestly. Just on this other level of greatness, and Ricochet got to be Ricochet. And
oh, yeah, this is true Ricochet.
And Takeshita got to be Takeshita. My match of the year was Ospreay versus Takeshita from Revolution. I've said that. That's been my favorite wrestling match of the year. I thought that was the best wrestling match of the year. Everything. So when you put all three of these people in the ring, and Ricochet got to be Ricochet, and I think over these last two matches, one with Ospreay, one in this triple threat, I feel like we're finally getting to see Ricochet shed that old skin and just be him. You know what I mean? He's finding that style that he might have
left. I'm just shocked that, like, Ricochet can fucking move after he took that, like, that table bump, dude. I thought his head got crushed.
Oh, dude.
That shit scared the fuck out of me.
Dude, one of the best looking things I've seen all year. Just That's how you write somebody out of a that's how you write somebody out of a triple threat match.
He's not getting up after that. I'll tell you that right now.
But when they did the Superman pose and then Takeshita fucked it up, I was like, oh, that's so amazing. I'm like I'm rooting for Takeshita. And in that moment when they hit it and then he knocks them out, I hated him. I was like, fuck you. You broke up our Superman pose moment. And I was just like, that's how you know it's a good one. Like, I'm rooting for Takeshita, and I just like, no, you fucking asshole. Why'd you ruin
my moment?
Why'd you ruin my moment? And I thought for that real was cool. But there were so many just different spots. And they did the thing, and I got to shout this out. I had listened to a few reviews, so this is not my own original thought. But they went against the grain on the triple threat match where one person's always sitting out and the other two are just doing their shit. All three were active in this match until Ricochet just completely got wiped out of it.
Literally, dude. I mean, like, the amount of, like, Ranas and suplexes that they were, like, going into each other. And, like, it would basically feel like a guy gets ping-ponged almost, like, in between somebody, like, two wrestlers.
And then, Kyle Fletcher. I mean, now we're about to get a Kyle Fletcher-Will Ospreay feud, which is, like, probably no one has raised their stock over the last year more than Kyle Fletcher. You know, he has been on fire over the last year. So the fact that we get him and Will Ospreay doing their thing, it's like, yeah, those are going to be banger matches. Another match that very well could be put in Will Ospreay's match of the year, and it hasn't even happened yet. We know it's going to be a banger. We saw them wrestle earlier this year, but now we're going to get to see the new attitude or old attitude or whatever of Kyle Fletcher, and it's going to add a new shape to the match, and it'll probably be another one that could be in your Will Ospreay match of the year. It's like, you're going to have to call it, they're going to have to change the name of the Meltzer Ward to the Will Ospreay match of the year.
It's going to, dude, I will tell you, if it doesn't change this year, I don't know when the fuck it will.
Because
so. It's just how it is.
I think at least three matches are going to be in the top 10. At least three Will Ospreay matches. So I'm looking forward to this. This match was excellent. 5 stars, 5.5 stars. I wouldn't go 7, but it was the best triple threat match to me that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like, it's this, and then it's the Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles match. Yeah. It's those two.
Yeah, because I've seen good triple threat matches. I've never been one of those people that are completely out on triple threat matches. I've seen good triple threat matches. I just thought this one was, like, especially great.
Oh, yeah. Now, of course, we had one segment in ring for this show, which was when Nana came out and brought out Swerve Strickland, because Swerve coming back, he's in Washington, and he comes out basically, though, he says, my medical update right now is I'm still a little wonky. I still feel a tingling in the back of my neck. It's almost like everything I said about Bryan Danielson is coming back to me. But he is medically cleared, but he wanted to address his hometown to give his future. And that's what MVP and Shelton Benjamin interrupt him. And basically MVP comes out saying, like, maybe your minion hasn't given you my business card yet because you haven't answered my emails. So, again, goes about how we have history and I believed in you before you believed in yourself, and goes. And basically Swerve says, yeah, you gave me some great advice back in 2017. I learned a lot when I beat you in Defy, which I love the shout out of Defy. He said in Shelton Benjamin was a big inspiration for him too. But basically he's like, Nana, the stuff MVP saying, he's not wrong. He's like, I lost the main event of All Out. I lost my childhood home. I lost my championship under your watch. But on the other hand, I wouldn't have any of those things happen if it wasn't for you, Nana. So he goes back and forth, but basically he goes, I'm already our most dangerous man in AEW, but I could be even more dangerous. But he goes, Nana, there are still things that irk me about you, but you are my family, and I don't turn my back up on family for anybody. So MVP, you could take your little business cards and shove them up your ass. And Shelton then proceeds to be like, we're telling you, not asking you. And that's when MVP tried to separate it, and referees came out as they were blocking, and you swerve and Shelton, man. Let's go. Like, we're getting this match, and it's going to be crazy. So It was a fine enough segment. Honestly, like, I get why it happened, because it brought out Swerve in Washington and also got those guys on the show. Kind of slowed things down, but considering they needed to do something after that match, having a segment actually after one of the most insane matches you've ever seen, it does slow the show down, but it doesn't affect a match. So honestly, I wasn't too mad about it when I thought about it after watching it. I was like, yeah, I mean, this kind of makes sense as a nice thing to put in between two matches, especially when the match you're going in between of is Kenosuke, Takeshita, Ricochet, and Ospreay.
Dude, the entrance. When Swerve comes in, he's standing there and all the pyro's going off, and he does the Who's House, and then he does his hand on his head thing. Dude, he looked like a god then.
Absolutely did.
I was like, I didn't have a problem with this segment just because of that. And then Shelton Benjamin went to threatening Swerve. Shelton Benjamin, all I have to say is I hope your address is not listed. Do you know what this man does? Okay,
oh,
you're
going to
threaten
yeah.
him? You're going to threaten him? Of all people, you're going to threaten him? That was the first time I've watched wrestling and someone threatened someone, and I felt bad for the person doing the threatening. So, yeah, you don't threaten Swerve. I'm like, he's crazier than you. Whatever you think you are, he's crazier than that. So I thought that was really cool. And then they got in front of each other's face, and I was like, okay, I need this match right now. And yeah, and it's just like, oh, Shelton Benjamin, yeah. And then MVP, he carries it so well. He carries that menace to him. You know, he's done this so a long time. There's this respect and menace. I call him Black Paul Heyman, because he just takes this whole essence of who he is, and it's just like in everything he does, in every moment, in every facial expression, how he says his words, everything, it's almost everything is a threat. It's like, I could be you, like, man, you're looking good today. I'm like, hey, man, what did I do? You know, that kind of thing, because everything he says comes with intent, and it's perfect for what they're building to, which I'm guessing, you know, everyone's guessing is Swerve versus Lashley.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we move on now, and we have the 2 out of 3 falls match between Hologram and the Beast Morthos. I thought this was another really, really strong match. I liked how I just love the ability of Morthos to be able to do matches like this, and he's just way more mobile than he has any right to be. The Rana that they did on the apron, I thought was just absolutely crazy. Hologram wins the first fall, but basically gets slammed onto the ramp, which slows him down. Morthos takes the second fall, but in the end, Hologram wins the third fall. 2 out of 3 falls matches can sometimes be a bit long for my taste, but I thought this one was decently timed. I thought these guys wrestled really, really well. I've never been like mega huge into Hologram personally, but I will never doubt that the guy can't wrestle. I'm hoping that we can get some more matches like this out of Hologram, because he did look good in this. I felt like, I just think Beast Morthos is a fucking monster. I love the things that Morthos can do just because of like who he is and the way he looks. But I thought this was another good match. Really, really strong match, I would say.
Yeah, and this match was featured on a new show on Fox Sports Mexico called the All Elite Show. So really? the reason I'm hearing that they did this match was, you know, it appeals to Mexican audiences. So thought that was pretty cool. And the crowd took a moment to get into it.
Took a little bit of time. Yeah. And they didn't seem like they cared about Morthos at first when he came out, but yeah, they did get into it later.
Yes. And those are like my favorite type of matches, where the fans are like, they decide, oh, this isn't worth my time. And then the two guys go out there and they work so hard, and it's like, fuck you, pay attention right now.
Oh, yeah. They
made people pay attention. And they put on a killer match. You know what? Random 2 out of 3 fall, kind of. Hey, I know it wasn't random. I know they did build it on Collision. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't a random match, but it felt kind of random for this pay-per-view. And yeah, but it ended up being a really good part of the show. So yeah, no questions for me. Hologram, Beast, you pretty much put the Beast Morthos on my TV anytime you want to.
I'm right there with you with that. And now Hologram is 15-0. So 15 we then have Darby Allin versus Brody King in a grudge match. And this match gave me everything, like with Brody just whipping around Darby like a fucking rag doll, like swinging him into the guardrail. He's choking him on the top of the ramp. They fucking do the steel step setup, and Darby like jumps on his back and all this type of stuff. Like, dude, like these two guys are guys that could wrestle anytime, any place, any day, and like it will always be good. It will always be quality. They're like two guys that are just like, they just feel perfectly fit for each other. It's the David and Goliath, but for like edgy, fucking hardcore metal audiences. I feel like, yeah, like that's what these guys are. They're perfectly linked to each other. I don't know if this was necessarily better than their other meetings. I'd have to go back and look at them again, but I still think this one was incredibly, incredibly strong. And I just, again, Darby continues to just like make you care so much. Like when he's getting like the steel steps shoved on top of him, and like it, like literally like Dart, like Brody's just walking up the steps and just stomping repeatedly on them. And Darby just does not quit. He just keeps on coming and coming and coming and coming. And it's just like, it's crazy. He, and also the bump that Brody took when he got shoved onto the steel steps from the second rope, that looked like it sucked. And then Darby proceeds to just jump on him, like coffin drop, jump on him, which was just crazy. But yeah.
This match was the reason I state that people like Brody and Lance Archer should be doing like squash matches every week, right? Because when you beat them, when it comes down to it and you finally beat them, it always looks impressive. This match made Darby look like a god because
absolutely, it was so good to see him finally get Brody King and beat him.
And then he actually pinned him, which he had never done. Apparently, I didn't know that until they said it in the match. He had never actually, you know, got a 1-2-3 victory over Darby. I mean, Darby had never gotten a 1-2-3 victory over him in the time, just all their matches. So he finally gets a pin. It's at home. It's great. Brody King's still one of my favorites. I hope he's in the Continental Classic. They find a spot for him again. But yeah, this match was excellent. I can honestly say I did zone out a little because I saw where it was going. But right. I think the step spot just like snapped me back in it. And I was like, oh, what's up? Hey.
Exactly.
Good wrestling.
Darby getting a win like this is good. I need Darby to continue to be just bigger and bigger and all that kind of stuff. I love when my guy gets to get wins like this. And I like the respect that they showed afterwards, because, I mean, like, these two guys, I feel like, are, for, like I said, they're forever linked.
Absolutely.
We then have the AEW World Tag Team Championship match, the Young Bucks versus Private Party. I liked how the crowd really started to get into Private Party, especially as the match went on. I felt like they really started to get into
it. What did you think about their video entrance? I thought that was pretty cool.
And that was...
It actually tricked me. Because I was like, oh, are they about to make Private Party win this match?
Yeah, they did like a whole video, like building them up and everything like that. And I was like, you know what? I appreciate it. Like I said, like Private Party should have been a bigger thing for, like, well before this. Like I said, from where they started with AEW, they should have been so much bigger. But they had setbacks and just like disappeared for a while. So it just felt like, you know, it just felt like that they should be at this level well before this, but that's holding on to stuff, and I'm not trying to do that. I thought they did a really good job. It reminded me a lot of, they hit a lot of similar stuff, I feel like, from their first match that they had in the tag team championship tournament from when the first year of Dynamite happened. And dude, they're still such good wrestlers. And I remember really, really enjoying them when I first discovered them in that first year of AEW, and I was like, man, this team is crazy fucking good. And then they worked with the Hardys, and I was like, yeah, they deserve to work with the Hardys and stuff like that, because those two teams are amazing. And now we're finally getting them back into a title picture's position. Obviously, no chance in hell they were winning this match, and I knew that going into it, which, again, it detracts a little bit for me, because I'm like, yeah, these guys are doing amazing stuff, but, like, holy shit, I could call this away from, like, miles upon miles upon miles away. But I still thought they did a good job. Young Bucks wrestling, I will never question. same thing as Jack. But again, I'm just sitting here being like, when the fuck are we going to find somebody to take these belts off these idiots? So that's where I'm at, you know, just give me the challengers that I know will be giving them a chance to just rip those belts off their shoulders.
And who'd have thought? I mean, shocking. I don't know anyone that ever had this thought ever, especially on this show. But when you book real tag teams together, they put on really good matches.
Amazing. It's an amazing concept.
And you put real tag teams together, and hey, in this match, both of the tag teams got over. Oh my God. This is such a novel concept. When you put people that work together that they can put on a great match. It's amazing how that works out. And you know what? It wouldn't have made any sense at any other time ever other than this. No! Dude, the Young Bucks are amazing. They're excellent. They're one of the greatest tag teams ever. You can literally take any tag team, not taking anything from Private Party because they're amazing. But the Young Bucks are so good, you can literally take any tag team and put them on the other side of the thing, and they're going to make them think they can win, and then they're going to snatch your fucking heart out like they did in this match. And it was amazing, and it was like, dude, this is how you get tag teams over. I feel like Private Party came out of this in an exponentially better position than they were before the match.
Oh, significant.
Now, I don't know what they're going to do. And that's where AEW sometimes slips up, is that they go get these matches and the person will get over in the loss and then you won't see them for a month.
Correct.
And so I'm hoping Private Party at least wrestles somebody and picks up a win on Rampage or Collision or something to keep their momentum going, because they just had this great, I wouldn't call it star-making performance, star-reaffirming a performance, this performance that reminded them that, hey man, the Private Party can go. And now you can get behind them, give them a good storyline, and build on this.
Yes. No, and I'm right there. I'm right there with you there. Just like, you got to capitalize on this, I feel like. So if you want to really give Private Party a push, really give them a push. They looked great in a loss. Now you have to make them look great in some significant wins.
Correct.
So we move on to the Ring of Honor World Championship match between Mark Briscoe and Chris Jericho. And I think it's pretty fair to say, like, I'm going to say right now, this match wasn't bad, but it was easily the weakest match on the show.
Now, I will tell you, this is where I saw it happening, and I went to 7-Eleven. So, be mad at me. Then I watched it later. I got about halfway through, and then I realized why I went to 7-Eleven. It was fine.
It was a fine match, but again, it was significantly, this match being the semi-main, like, in a sense, kind of makes sense, considering, like, obviously you're trying to, like, save all the excitement for the main event, but the show was pretty long, considering, so,
He hit the Dre Driller, and,
that was the Mark, one thing where I was just like, man.
Didn't Mark kick out at one? Like, he kicked out really quick.
It was a quick kick out. Yeah.
Yes, I think he kicked out at one, and it was like, okay, let's fucking go. And I think they went to the end pretty quickly after that with Mark just winning, and which is great. And you know what? And I will always shout Jericho out for putting over.
He didn't kick out at one. He kicked out at two. Yeah,
he did kick out at two. Okay. No, I just remember it was a pretty like aggressive kick out. So
this was the most aggressive and like serious I've seen. Yeah. Mark Briscoe in quite some time. And I do like the fact that like Jericho showed that he got under his skin. Like, yeah. I think Jericho had some of his better heel moments in this match. And I think it just made Mark Briscoe seem, giving him a bit more of a serious task as opposed to just, you know, we love the word of the day and the conglomeration. We love all that kind of stuff with our boy Mark, But you know, the Briscoes are still dangerous. They've always been dangerous. So, like, it's important to remind people that, like, you take these guys seriously, too. Which I don't think anybody really forgot, obviously. But, you know, he's done a lot of silly stuff with him doing his thing. But people love him for it. So, like, I'm all good with it. Winning with the J Driver, too, I thought was great. But it was solid. Again, it was fine. It's not going to be anything that people remember from the show, clearly. But it did what it was designed to do, but no one's going to talk about it moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
So finally, we move on to the main event, Bryan Danielson versus Jon Moxley, the final countdown. I loved how Mox came out and attacked him during the final countdown, and they keep playing the music. genuinely was so fucking hyped about it. Your girl, Marina Shafir, was heavily involved in this match. Heavily involved in this match, I felt like.
Goat.
Like, any chance she could, she did.
Yeah, it's one of those people. It's one of those people, usually, you know, I'm like, oh, man, she's so hot. But you know, with Marina, I just want to, like, watch her beat people up. That's it. I just want to stand there and watch her destroy people, you know. I'm a little afraid of her. No, that's a lie. I'm a lot afraid of her. No, don't get me wrong. I have just, like, never seen someone cast it as a character, quote-unquote, change that seems so natural. Like, everything she does seems natural. Even when she was yelling in Russian, that was fine. I personally would never have her talk. That would probably be the last. She
doesn't talk much at all.
Dude, her was just like, everything about her is just everything threatening. Like, she could beat, she could go win the world title tomorrow, and I wouldn't question it. Just don't talk. And it's not because she can't talk. I'm pretty sure she could do it if she wanted to. She just doesn't need to. Every time she talks, it takes away a little bit from her mystique. So just don't talk, because the mystique is what everything is. And this match was a match. Like, honestly, can say this. Bryan Danielson, one of the best wrestlers of our generation. I've never been super into the Bryan Danielson wrestling match, personally.
See, I was going to say that about Moxley.
And then Moxley, he does the little brawl fight style. So they did the match, and I thought it was good. I thought it was, you know, I think it was above fine. I wouldn't call it fine. It was above fine because it was very hard-hitting, very physical. But I was just waiting on the end, unfortunately.
We kind of went into this being like, we're gonna call time on Bryan Danielson being a full-time wrestler. And we knew it was all coming, and it was still emotional for a lot of people. Like,
yeah,
and Excalibur was emotional for this.
Yeah, and you know, some people didn't like it. I like it. I like to me, everyone that is on the mic or in front of the screen is in character, right?
Sure, dude. I was completely fine with it with Samantha Irving for Cody. I'm completely fine with it for this.
So if he, that's what I'm saying. If that's what he thought was great for his character, you do it. And, you know, it's going to hit with some people. It's not going to hit with it. I do think in the moment, it felt like it elevated the moment a little bit because he was getting choked up. Nigel staring at it like, oh, my God.
That was the one that really hit. I love the Nigel moment is the one that was the best, where he literally was just like,
maybe this is too far.
Dude, no, it was like what it was I felt like, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, it felt like Joker watching, realizing, oh, my God, Batman's gone.
Yeah. Like, I need it, Batman. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what it felt like to me.
Yes. But, yes, so Moxley wins with submission. And this is where my controversial take comes in.
Go ahead.
So, Yuta comes in with Darby to, quote-unquote, save Bryan Danielson. He looks down, and then he takes out Darby. And then he chokes out Bryan Danielson with the bag. Let me tell you, this was the most real-life, understandable heel turn ever. Why? Willie Yuta comes in the ring. He looks to the left and he sees four killers. Moxley, he sees Moxley, Cesaro, Pac, and Marina Shafir staring at him. To the left. To the right, he sees Bryan Danielson on the ground, beat up. That's what he sees. So he has two choices. I by myself with Darby Allin, maybe the smallest human in the world, can try to take out these four killers. Or, me already being a champion with them, I can take out the guy that's abandoning me anyway. Because it is abandonment. Because this wasn't a Matt title versus career match. This guy is choosing to stop his full-time career.
Correct.
He is choosing to leave Willa Yuta. He is quitting in all sense and purpose. He is quitting. So I can sit here and try to defend the beaten up quitter to the right, or I can join the killer group who I'm already in a title match with. And yeah, I'm going to suffocate this guy. He's going away anyway. He's not going to do anything about it. Might as well suffocate him with the bag. It just made sense. The dumbest thing Willa Yuta could have done was to go after the killers. It would have made no sense. I would have lost respect
like,
for him.
Are you really going to try to? Are you really going to try and come out here and like? You're going to be the one that has to feel the after effects of this. Danielson will not be here. You got to face the repercussions if you decide to go against the killers that were in the ring with you.
Dude made the smartest decision ever. I was just like, dude, he could have not wanted to do it. You do it fucking anyway, and you survive to live tomorrow. Darby Allin gets taped up. Luckily, that's all that happens, because they were in a murdering mood that night. They could have murdered Darby.
Oh, yeah, they could have killed him, too.
Yeah, and then the rest of our crowd comes, and they leave. And you know what the most gangster thing? He didn't even put the title on. He put it in a black bag like a crime syndicate that just pulled off a robbery and bounced. Oh, God, I love
I'm just
this.
Like I said, I'm just hoping now we get a little bit more explanation now that Danielson's going to be gone of what the hell the plan is now for Moxley now that he has the belt for a fourth time, record-breaking fourth time, and what this group is looking to accomplish, why they are doing the things that they are doing, and why they want to basically hold AEW like this. So, like, I need some explanations is the one thing I would say. But I would also say, as a guy who was there for when Bryan Danielson first arrived in AEW in 2021 at All Out, he has been an absolute pleasure to have in AEW. He's given us some of the best moments and matches of AEW's short history. And it's going to be weird not seeing this man as a full-time wrestler because, I mean, we saw it when he was forced to retire. The one thing I'll say is it's glad to know that this man is choosing to stop full-time and he can be a family man and he can do the things that he wants to do and he's not limited by what he can't do physically. That to me is something that there was genuine concerns with when he was forced to retire because of the injuries that he had suffered. So the fact that he is able to now choose to not be a full-time wrestler and he can choose that is a blessing because obviously health is the biggest thing. So thank you, Danielson, for everything you've done for AEW. Thank you for everything that you've done for professional wrestling, straight up.
Well, I want to say shout out to the crowd. That stunned silence was amazing. They didn't think he was
great.
Didn't think he was going to lose at home. I thought that was awesome. But yeah, shout out to Bryan Danielson. I was there for WrestleMania 30. I was there for Kofi Mania when he put over Kofi. You know, his debut in AEW. And then, you know, when he won the title at All In. And then I was there for the Ospreay match. So Bryan Danielson, as far as the last, 15 years of my wrestling life has been as big a part of my wrestling life as anyone. And that includes the fact that he had to take a significant gap off during it. And even when he was off, he gives The Miz like one of his most memorable moments on a kind of throwaway after show. So Bryan Danielson's so good at everything. I hope he still has a lot to do with AEW as far as the booking and all that kind of stuff. He stays on the payroll. He stays helping. And, you know, I'll see him at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, we'll see.
All I can think is, like, he ain't signing a contract.
No.
There's a reason you don't sign a contract. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
There's a reason. I mean, John Cena has a year of, you know, matches that he has to knock, his dream matches. Yeah, you know, maybe Daniel Bryan is in there. But no, I hope, you know, I wish Bryan Danielson the best. Seriously, the dude deserves it. I'm glad he got to kind of go out on his own because he's not even all the way gone. That's what makes it not sad. It's because it's not over.
It's not fully over.
Yeah, that's what makes it not sad. If you don't hear me having any type of reverence for the moment, it's because it's not over. It's like, oh, my full-time career is over. What does that mean? I don't even know what that means. If he wrestles 15 times next year, right? probably mm-hmm. as much as he's wrestled this year, and he would still be considered quote unquote part time. So I don't know what this means. So I
like I said, that's why my focus now is what the hell does this mean for this BCC group, basically.
But, yeah, but I hope he gets his surgery. Everything goes all correct. He enjoys his time with his daughter, his son. Gets to do everything he wants to do. But like I said, yeah, if I didn't get all wrapped up emotionally in it, we all know why. But yeah, yes, I'm looking forward to what this John Moxley thing is.
So then I will just lastly say, like, what's your overall thoughts on this show?
I thought the show does what it... honestly, the show did what every pay-per-view does for me in AEW. It restores the feeling. Every pay-per-view, if I was kind of, you know, like, the weekly shows for the last month or so have not been the greatest to me. And so it's sometimes hard to get through, sometimes hard to talk about. Then the pay-per-view comes, and it's like, okay, this is what you love. This
oh, yeah. Is, no, the pay-per-view restores your feeling in it every single time.
And it gets you excited for Wednesday again, and it's just like, okay, let's follow the fuck up. And honestly, the excitement that I keep reminded that this is around the time of last year that the Continental Classic started, and I was like, oh, okay. Because that was some of the best TV, period, in AEW.
Yeah, no question. Again, I'll especially point out the first two matches, Jay White and Adam Page, Mariah and Willow, and then, of course, Ospreay, Ricochet, and Takeshita. And those would be the three matches. I feel like it was top loaded besides Jackass.
That first half of just wrestling was amazing.
Yeah, it was crazy how like strong like three out of the four matches were. It's crazy. Like how it, nuts considering how everyone was so excited for the main event. Yes. Like crazy. So but that is our Wrestle Dream review. Real quick, we're going to just go down. Obviously, Dynamite, when you guys are hearing the show, is tonight. This is what we got coming up on Dynamite.
Dude, I just want to say, when is the last time they have announced this much for Dynamite?
No, I can't remember.
That's the whole show. I don't see a match or segment being added. That looks like the whole show.
That looks like the whole show, yep. Yeah. We're going to have a TBS championship match between Mercedes Moné and Queen Aminata. Leo Rush, who is also, I believe he's officially All Elite now, right?
Yeah, he is re-elite. He's the re-elite, yeah. Yes.
So, yeah, he's going to be going up against Shelton Benjamin. FTR will be going up against Big Bill and Brian Keith. Christian is getting a match against the Switchblade Jay White. We're going to get Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy, and Rocky Romero versus the Elite. Adam Cole is going to make his official return to Dynamite. And also Jon Moxley. We'll see what the fuck he's going to do.
Yeah. And he champ, and no one is safe.
No one is safe.
Will Ospreay, Will Hobbs said, oh, really? And he had like a picture. And then Shane Taylor's like, I'm from East Cleveland. I'm like, I don't know what that means. But when he says it, it kind of sounds scary. I mean, it sounds like that's not a place I would want to go, East Cleveland now. But yeah, I'm not going to. It looks like it's a loaded show. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to you going on your trip. And when you get back, we're going to talk about this show. So just to let y'all know, your next All Things Elite won't be until next week, as in Austin's going to be on vacation.
Yes, I will be in California. I'm going to Halloween Horror Nights for the first time ever. And I'm so fucking excited.
Yeah, we got some friends of the show that are Halloween Horror Nights veterans.
Jared O'Brien, yes. My boy.
And then Terrifier 3 came out this week, and my friend Tiffany loved it. And Jericho,
oh really?
Jericho's in the movie.
Yeah, no, I did see that. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, so
there's been a lot of wrestlers in movies recently. With MJF.
No, and we get this week the Mildred Burke movie comes out. Toni Storm, Camille, and who plays. I don't want to say it like this, but who plays the black chick? Who plays Ethel Johnson?
Oh my god!
Mildred Burke movie. It's called Millie. So yeah, it's about Mildred Burke and Millie. Mildred Burke movie. Come on, sir. But it looks like a lot of AEW people are in the movie.
Seemingly, yeah.
I think it's Athena is Ethel. But yeah. Oh. Yeah. Fair Queen enough. Of the Ring. Queen of the Ring. It's Emily Bette Richards. If you are a fan of the Arrowverse, she was Felicity in Arrow. She's playing Mildred Burke. And so that's going to be kind of, you know, awesome. And then Josh Lucas is playing like her husband at the movie. And yeah, it's going to be good. And, another AEW tie. Jim Ross was the executive producer of the movie.
Crazy.
No, but we're going to let you get to bed because you got to catch a movie.
Yeah. No, yeah. I got a lot to do tomorrow with my early flight. So. Obviously that's going to do it for this episode of All Things Elite, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in for our Wrestle Dream review. We will be back next week, for All Things Elite, obviously, and be sure to continue to support the show by downloading it on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave a rating and review and subscribe and share us around with your fans, friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. I am at Austin Sumowitz. SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. Follow the podcast at AT Elite Pod and follow at Social Suplex, who make this show possible. I'm going to go get my pants scared off of me tomorrow at Horror Nights. I'm going to be very happy. And Floyd, can you go ahead and take us home on this episode of All Things Elite?
Trinity Fatu is Ethel Johnson.
Okay, so, it was Naomi. Man,
so yes, so not to disrespect her. I didn't mean to.
No disrespect.
It was just my thought, you know. Thought process in my head. Well, thank y'all for listening. This is gonna be a quick goodbye. I will leave you how I always leave you. Whether it's home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.